Hey everybody, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're going to go in deep on Danny Rand, the man who can focus his chi and make his hand unto a thing of iron. Let's do it.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Exchange here on Book Circle Online. Of course, this is the show where we talk about to the creators and also look at the books that come to your comic book shop every single Wednesday or to your digital bookstore, depending on how you like to buy your books. I'm your host, Frank Moran, joined by two other hosts. So look at that, we're just going to be a lot of hosts here. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
I am one of those two other hosts. I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And I am the other one of those other two hosts, and I am Lex Michael, all over social media at the Lex Michael.
Now, of course, you can always like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. We have to always just say this is like a medical disclaimer for the show, is that our beloved Lex Michael has a condition where he needs 5 stars to live.
They're going to make me a bracelet one of these days.
Yeah. That's right. There you go. And just 5 stars on there?
Yeah.
That's it. Needs 5 stars.
Just constant validation or I wilt.
I imagine getting a med alert. I don't have 5 stars and I can't get up.
I'm not feeling good enough about myself right now. Please, somebody say something nice.
We love you, Lex.
That's right.
You're in a safe place.
Put it in the cup. Drink it. Yeah,
there you go. Can also subscribe to the YouTube channel as well as hop in the chat. Lucretia is our resident oracle. She's got her laptop up and running, which means the chat is up and running as well. So share your thoughts about anything in comic books in general or anything in particular that we're discussing in this episode. So we're going to as I mentioned at the top of the show, Iron Fist. We're going to talk about him in just a little bit. The reason we're doing that, though, is you may have noticed if you've been driving around and seen tons of billboards all over the place, have heard any of the advertisements or anything like that, there's a new series coming to Netflix, the next installment of the Marvel Netflix shows. Iron Fist is debuting.
Yes.
It's debuting. It's dropping on March 17th.
You don't say.
Yeah. I don't say. I did say. Huh. I did say that. Yes. So, yes. We have a little bit of the trailer right there. I guess we can play that to get everybody excited.
All right. And while we're getting that up, Jonathan Deming is in our chat, and he says we are the best host ever.
Thank you. I'm going to pour that into my cup. Yep. I'm going to drink it.
Danny Rand. I've been away a long time.
Let's go. You don't belong here.
I'm Danny Rand. Guys, I just want to talk. Hey! Welcome to Rand Enterprises.
This happens in LA a lot.
I left here 10 years old in a jet with my parents. I became the lone survivor.
Danny Rand, back from the dead. Why has he waited this long to show up? How the hell did he learn martial arts?
Where'd you train?
Kunlun. My father instilled in me a love and respect for this company that has never faded. This is my home.
Rand is my company.
This city is no place for Danny Rand.
We put in practice and discipline. No giving up, no giving in.
Danny, what happened to you? Why are you really back here?
Some bad people have gotten on the inside. Criminals.
I know what they are, what they can do. To fight them, we need someone with special skills.
I've been training my whole life for this. This is my destiny.
You need me.
The change is coming, Danny.
Become what you were meant to be. I am the Iron Fist.
The hell does that mean?
Well, he's got them glowing hands.
Look at that, yeah. Yes! So that is, as we mentioned, it's going to be dropping on Netflix on March 17th. So, are you guys excited?
No sign of the yellow bandana in the trailer?
No, there's already been discussions that certainly part of the Iron Fist origin is that you know, he's in Kunlun. He battles a dragon.
Like he gets his powers because he puts his fist through a dragon's molten heart.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a cool part of the story.
But didn't they say? Wasn't there some conversation about how, like, I didn't know how tongue in cheek was, like, we don't have Game of Thrones money. There's not gonna be any dragon fighting. But I'm also going molten heart of a dragon. You just put like a bowl of goop in front of him and you play it like it's dragon heart mush, and you could still do it. Can't have him fight a dragon, unfortunately.
Yeah, it just seems like budgetarily they don't have all the cool stuff. It's going to be name checked, but never really seen about that.
So there's going to be talk of a dragon, but no actual dragon.
Yeah, just kind of a disappointment.
Is it possible we get a dragon in the Defenders? Is it possible that the Defenders assemble to defend from dragons?
That seems pretty cool.
I would watch the crap out of Jessica Jones fighting a dragon.
Yeah.
Also, I guess, as I've been told, that Iron Fist is not going to don his costume at all through the series.
I'm of two minds, because when I first learned that season one of Daredevil, he was not going to have the red suit until maybe the very end of the final episode of the season, I was real bummed out. About two episodes into the season, I didn't care at all. I didn't miss it. I thought this totally works for me. I forgot almost that I was looking at the black ninja outfit because they got the character really right. So I'm like, all right, I'll take the leap, maybe, because they've done it. They've walked that line successfully for me in the past.
Yeah, because Luke Cage or Jessica Jones, neither one really get their outfits either. So it sort of makes sense, but I like a little bit of a nod, because with Luke Cage, you get a little bit of a nod, a little bit of yellow in there. With this, couldn't we have him wear a yellow bandana just as a joke, like as a disguise, just some way of just throwing it in there?
Like all of his shirts are open all the way down to his stomach.
He's a deep V guy, you know, just make that.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly at least Luke Cage has gotten away from like the very superhero-esque costume that he had, and they did a nod for that in the series with the tiara on there during the flashback. So he's kind of more of a street clothes wearing kind of guy. Same thing with Jessica Jones. So, you know, it's okay to show them in the series, like kind of just, you know, they're doing their normal day-to-day things and their normal day-to-day clothes. But to Iron Fist, man, he's just got such a... I'm a huge fan of the deep V, but even they've kind of contemporized that, and they just made it just a solid green shirt without the huge wing collar, which I miss terribly.
I know we won't get the wing collar in any iteration of these shows, but I want it.
Yeah. And even the current Power Man and Iron Fist series there that David Walker's writing, they kind of give him almost... It seems like an upscaled, like, tracksuit.
Yeah.
But, like, cool for Iron Fist. So I was like, you know, you can do something like that, too.
Yeah, Iron Fist versus Juicy Couture.
Yes.
They don't make that for men.
I would like to see... I mean, do we know... There's been no real confirmation one way or the other as to whether we're getting the full costume in Defenders yet. We've just been told that we're not getting it here in this first season. I'm hoping we get the costume, because otherwise, like, Daredevil's gonna look real weird hanging out with everybody else.
Yeah, he's like, well, you know, somebody should have told me this wasn't a costume thing.
Because for Daredevil, I mean, certainly you loved first season and he's in the black suit, but how much did your enjoyment level go up, though, when you actually see him in the more familiar Daredevil superhero costume?
It was pretty cool, and season two was so much better. I mean, season one set everything up, but at the same time, I mean, do they really need to wear the costumes? They could clearly tell Matt that they have them on and he wouldn't know.
No, that's true.
he had his little fire vision thing, and he'd be like, that your shape is too streamlined for that to be a superhero suit. But no, like in all the photos, that they released, maybe it was Entertainment Weekly, which magazine had the photo spread, the Defenders photos. Okay, so they're all in their streets, and Matt Murdock is in his like lawyer outfit, and I'm like, yeah, okay, but he's not fighting lawyer, like he's not gonna take his stick, and like, although he does do that, but he's not gonna be wearing his streets and taking the stick for the whole eight episodes and like whapping people with it.
No, it's like
I want the super suits.
Yeah, I want them too. I mean, and I'm cool. Like two and two, that's a perfect number. You got half in street clothes and you got half in the costumes. That's awesome.
And I feel like Jessica Jones, especially, like, yes, she doesn't have a costume in this iteration, but her sense of dress is very specific. That's almost a costume in and of itself.
Yeah.
I feel like Luke's costume is mostly just like being real muscly.
No, that's true. And I feel like, Iron Fist, he pretty much just wears his costume all the time. You very rarely do see him not in that. Just even as he's walking around, he's like, I still got my costume.
Yeah, in the comics, he's always hanging out in that suit with the bandana mask done up on his head.
Yeah. So it's like, come on, you gotta. Yeah, I can understand why the other two you wouldn't do it, but come on, Danny Rand.
It's a little bit like, and I guess we'll get into this a little bit more fully in a few minutes. But it's a little bit like, because the Iron Fist is a mantle, right, that gets passed from person to person. So isn't this super suit that he wears a uniform in a sense?
Well, I mean, at least the color scheme of it is, but because as it passed throughout the years, I mean, it kind of varied from person
That's
to person and
true.
Parts of the world that they were doing it.
So if it's just the color scheme, why didn't Danny Rand, a modern guy who's going to have to hang out in like present day New York City, just pick like a green t-shirt maybe, or like a nice green polo and some like yellow jeans or something?
Nice green polo.
Yeah, I mean, and mustard yellow.
Like, why the deep V and the bandana mask specifically? If it was his choice, why was that? It was the 70s.
Well, it was the 70s. Yes, come on.
It's pretty comfy though. Those kung fu clothes, I'd walk around in that all day long.
It's true. They breathe, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Real well.
Come on, if you had a six pack like that, you know, when you want to just deep V it up all the time.
That one, like, yeah, that,
and sure. And that super sweet dragon Iron Fist tattoo on you. Come on,
and like, even if I couldn't pull it off, once my hands start glowing like that, what's anybody gonna say to me?
That's true.
Yeah. Nobody's messing with that guy.
Of course, that's a Marvel television production. But speaking of other Marvel news, we've also got another new series coming out. The Star Wars franchise has moved over from Dark Horse to Marvel. It's been there for a few years now.
Yes.
Been rebooted and revitalized pretty successfully.
I've been hearing some really good things about a couple of these books. A buddy of mine has been keeping up with the recent Obi-Wan and Anakin series, and I'm constantly hearing great things about that book from him.
Yeah, and Darth Vader had about a 25-issue series that Kieran Gillen and Salvador La Roca were doing it. And that was a really good series. Kind of took place between New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, kind of fit in that kind of gap. A lot of cool stuff was in that series, and just get to see Darth Vader being an awesome. But that series ended, and they're gonna. But I think that proved so successful, and everybody loves Darth Vader, so who doesn't want a series with him?
He's like the best character.
Yeah,
there does seem to be this recent effort made on the parts of the people tending the franchise to like take Darth Vader back and reclaim him. And it's like, all right, because now it's like the last time you saw him was like, no, and like,
yeah,
ew. So there seems to have been a real big push to reclaim Darth Vader as a badass, as like a truly monstrous, scary force. You've got some of these stories you're getting in the comics. You see, obviously, that sequence in Rogue One where he's taking the hallway apart. I appreciate it. I appreciate that we are reestablishing Vader as like the ultimate, the true embodiment of scariness and evil in this universe.
Yeah, and my brother is probably the most excited person, because if you've ever been to his house, he loves Darth Vader. There is Darth Vader everywhere. So for him to get back to his evil roots, can't wait for it.
But I just feel like no matter what they do with him, you're always just going to see Hayden Christensen there.
Nope.
It just weighs it down to me.
I just block it out.
And I can't.
That's the thing. I feel like a lot of people were in exactly the same headspace, and that's why I really do believe there has been this intentional effort made to wipe that from people's memories as best as can be done. And like, I'm with you. Like, watching Rogue One, for example, I'm not thinking about Hayden Christensen. I may occasionally be thinking about, you know, Darth Vader's costume has always looked a little weird.
Yeah.
A little strange, a little bulky, a little plasticky now that I think about it. His costume's always looked a little like an action figure to me. But I'm not thinking about Hayden anymore. And I think maybe that was, in no disrespect to him, that was a weird movie making experience for everybody. I don't necessarily blame Hayden Christensen for the way that all shook out. But that's not certainly tainting it for me in any way.
Yeah, and Jonathan Demme in the chat is with me. He never existed. And too, I think Hayden Christensen is a fine actor. I think that a lot of what was wrong with the first three Star Wars movies weren't so necessarily on the actors, per se. But I just pretend that those didn't happen. And that, you know, when McGregor was Obi-Wan in just some random thing.
That's literally
all I want to remember.
Yeah, the zeitgeist just had this collective shared
thought. And Mace Windu and Jimmy Smits, like, those things. Things, like, I'm totally Jimmy cool Smith. With, but everything else didn't happen.
You see, too, like, yeah. I feel, I don't want to knock these actors, because the best actors in that movie didn't come off particularly well, but Hayden Christensen tends to get a lot of really specific hatred. But you watch, there are videos now where you can go online, and people went back later and started going, hey, did anybody notice this? And you'll get these takes, and people will be like, watch Hayden Christensen's face and what happens with his face in this take. And it's not anything he does. You see that Lucas, at multiple points throughout the movie, digitally morphed takes together. So you're getting, within one shot, you're getting little bits of performance from multiple takes. So if he feels wooden or like a robot or like his performance is not super consistent within a scene, that actually is not totally on him.
Interesting. I never knew that that there was that much manipulation down to that level. But I mean, I guess it doesn't. You'd think like George Lucas would just do that for special effects and CGI characters. But even now, if he's using it for just his live actors too.
Dude loves his technology, and like, to his credit, you could say what you will about those movies. We don't get any number of the amazing movies that have happened since using a lot of the tools that George Lucas helped pioneer. So it's like, you know what? He made a couple of movies I don't love, but he can have those. I'm not mad at him.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, if you can forget that George Clooney was Batman, you can forget Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker.
Oof, man, I feel like I feel like it's easier to forget. But I didn't mind George Clooney's Batman, though. I thought he was all right.
He was something. That was something.
All right, I would take him over Val Kilmer.
I disagree.
I would put, you know what I would love to see? Yeah. I would love to see Val Kilmer in Batman and Robin and Clooney in Batman Forever.
And see if it changes it, yeah.
I don't think it would make either movie better or worse. Yeah. I just want to see it now.
Okay.
If you guys could make that, Joel Schumacher?
Somebody. Val Kilmer and George Clooney together and have like one hybrid being in both movies. And it's the same actor, but it's an amalgamation of George Clooney.
Almost like the composite Batman Superman, where he's half Val Kilmer, half George Clooney, just walking through.
You picture this thing actually out there, this half Val, half George, like they rap for the day and he takes off the bat suit and he's just like, kill me.
Nope, we'll see you back here at 6 a.m. So they are doing a new Darth Vader series here, and this is going to take place right after Revenge of the Sith.
Okay,
so kind of almost like Darth Vader Year One.
So he just killed the younglings of the temple and fought Obi-Wan, and now he's robot person.
Yes, he's just screamed no. I would like it for it to pick up immediately after he screams no.
Just like the awkward silence,
where it's like just like two or three pages of people just staring, just awkwardly for a minute, like.
Ooh. And like quietly in the background, Palpatine's like.
And this could be written by Charles Sewell and art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, who we talked about a little bit from Green Valley.
Yes.
Also does Amazing Spider-Man as well. So,
good looking books.
Yeah. And in fact, Stuart Immonen is taking over Amazing Spider-Man, and I love his art. So I feel like this is going to be a win-win situation for both of them.
Sure.
Yeah, because like Giuseppe, when he came out of Spider-Man, I was like, eh. But he's definitely won me over the length of time that he's been here.
He can draw dragons.
Yeah.
Want to ask, since we're talking about this specific book now, Frank, you've mentioned you've gone on record with your visceral hatred of the poor actor Hayden Christensen, who's done nothing to you personally, but you've spoken just now about your vitriolic hatred you feel for this man, right. And how he's ruined the character of Darth Vader for you.
Yes.
Okay, but let's compartmentalize that for a second.
All right.
Are you and Lucretia, same question, but you were not so vitriolic in your hate of this man. both of you guys, are you how much a Star Wars person are you, and how much, if you are one, does that extend for you guys into the expanded universe, whether it's comics, video games, the old novels that are now no longer canon, but maybe you had when you were younger?
Yeah, I had the old novels. I mean, I really, like, I grew up like loving Mara Jade, so I'm kind of sad that that may never happen, like a live action. But yeah, I love Star Wars growing up. As I say, my brother is obsessed. Like, whenever he's down, he literally reads Yoda quotes to bring himself up. So yeah, I mean, Star Wars is a part of our daily life. I mean, we grew up with all the action figures, even like the old ones that were like for when our dad was a kid. We would go get those at trades days or whatever you people call them here, swap meets. I don't know. I don't know. It's a different thing. But yeah, if we collect them, and like had a big old Millennium Falcon, so grew up just playing and loving Star Wars. That's why when we finally got to see Star Wars in the theater, when they remastered them, it was heartbreaking. Sorry, guys.
Why is this Jabba the Hutt scene here?
Yeah, why?
He stepped on his tail, guys. It was great. Come on now. Don't you forget that. Andy shot first. Hand shot first, guys. Never forget that.
Yeah. Han shot first.
Yeah.
That's seriously. Right. You four kids.
But so, Frank, are you much of a...
I was into also in the expanded universe. I read a lot of the books all the way up until like the big final arc that they were doing, where Marjay dies. Spoiler alert, guys, for a universe that does not exist anymore.
Yes.
So, I mean, and it's interesting to see what Star Wars is, what Lucasfilm and Disney has decided to kind of keep from that expanded universe and what they decided to kind of just sweep.
Seems like they're a little bit pulling some stuff back in. Like, we even saw in Rogue One the fact that Chirrut and Baze were both Guardians of the Whills, and that's going all the way back to, like, Lucas's original story treatment for Star Wars.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how some of that is coming back. Like, I remember reading a bunch of the books. Like, I read that Han Solo prequel trilogy that they had.
Yeah.
I read the Thrawn trilogy, like everybody else who was into these books.
That's, man, that is such a great series. And that's such a great character. And they brought him back into Rebels.
Yeah. And then, like, some of the side, like, the Tales of the Bounty Hunters or, like, Tales from the Cantina, those side books, like, little pocket stories in this universe.
Well, those are the one things that did make me laugh, though. It's like, there's probably not a character in Star Wars, at least the original films, that doesn't have probably an action figure and does not have a story told about them in some anthology somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like, you'd be hard-pressed to find some untapped, unmined territory of a character.
Yeah, that's the thing, is everyone's like, why do you like Boba Fett so much? It's like, read a book.
Salacious Crumb. If you don't know who Salacious Crumb is, he's the little cackling monkey guy that hangs out with Jabba the Hutt. That dude has a lengthy backstory. Go to Wikipedia, man. Your mind will explode.
And yeah, I feel like characters like Boba Fett got so much more love, and I feel like that really stoked the flames of fandom through the books and through the comics, because that's the only place you could really see him. You got teased with him in Empire, and then see him in Return of the Jedi, and you see the way that he goes out.
Dispatched pretty goofily.
You know, like Lucas, like he never does well with the characters that fans are most interested in. You look at Boba Fett, you look at Darth Maul, characters that are just like sent off packing, you know, too quickly. And you're like, man, you left this really cool guy and you didn't do anything with him.
Yeah, I mean, and Darth Maul is a great example of someone who really deserves sort of a reboot, because that was such a cool character.
Well, they're bringing
the
him. They brought him back on Clone Wars, right? And now on Rebels as well, I think. So at least they're actually finally tying some of that stuff up and doing something with that character who I accepted was dead, but sure, he's cool. I'll watch more with him.
Yeah, because I feel like there's just so much more you wanted to do with that character, and you're like, that was one of the coolest things about Phantom Menace. That's pretty much the only cool thing.
Pretty well, that, and then Liam Neeson was in it.
Yeah.
But guys, trade disputes.
Yeah.
Can't get enough.
Guys, Senator Lott Dodd of the Trade Federation insisting that there's nothing going on Naboo that ain't on the up and up. Come on, that's riveting motion.
That's right.
Tentpole entertainment at its finest.
To think that George Lucas is like, yeah, this is the great way I want to start this franchise. This is how I want my story to begin. This is, all right.
Now this is pod racing.
Now, some iconic moments that you're going to see in this series here. You're going to see the construction of Darth Vader's red lightsaber.
Yes.
The fallout of Order 66, the beginnings of the Inquisitor program from Star Wars Rebels, and the rise of the Empire as it quickly bends a galaxy under its control. And you're going to see Darth Vader kind of truly exploring the dark side.
I like that. Yeah. I like to explore the dark side.
Yeah. So it should be some interesting stuff. And Charles Soule, a good writer. If you read, like, you know, Letter 44 that he's doing with Oni, or he's on Daredevil currently for Marvel as well.
That's right.
He finished up a run on the Inhumans books. You know, your mileage may vary with the Inhumans characters.
Yeah, you're not a big Inhumans guy either, are you?
No. I only care about the royal family. Everything else I do not care about.
So where do you come down on this series that they're currently shooting for ABC, I believe? For the same showrunner as Iron Fist, if I'm not mistaken, Scott Buck.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like I could see maybe one season, and that's being generous. But then after that, it's like, great, that's your first season. Tell me about season two.
I don't know how many episodes they're planning on doing yet. I feel like it makes a ton of sense as like a miniseries. Like do like they did Legion. Like like eight.
Because I feel like these characters, I mean, you see the sales of just the comics for the Inhumans, not strong at all. And now they're rebooting them again with a couple different books. But man, there's just, I feel like Inhumans, and we've talked about this with many other characters, cool characters, but not ones that can hold their own series for any real length of time.
Yeah, and two, when you mentioned how the sales for the books themselves are low, why did they pick Inhumans when they literally could have picked just about anything else to kind of pair with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, yeah.
Or they could have just given Agent Carter another season. That was a great show.
Oh, I missed that show.
I mean, it's got to be because there's such a big division between the Marvel TV side and the Marvel film side. So when they made that split and Kevin Feige got to have control of the movie side, Inhumans was never his baby. That was that was Ike
Perlmutter.
Yes. And so when Kevin said, like, you know what, we're going to dump this, you know, Ike was saying, like, no, we're still making this. This is a great property. Let's do it as a TV show.
And I think there was some discussion of how, well, you know, we've got our movie rights to X-Men over at Fox, so we're going to try and to make our universe the same in the comics as it is in the movies, tie it all together as tightly as possible. We're going to try and phase out the X-Men a little bit. We've got this other group with somewhat similar, in a very broad sense, capabilities. We're just going to push this instead. But, like, X-Men's been around for decades now, and they've got a very passionate, very large audience, so it's not quite as easy to push them off to the side.
And the thing is like, the new X-Men show that's currently filming in Dallas with Stephen Moyer and Amy Acker that's going to be on Fox just sounds way better than Inhumans. And you're like, I'm actually excited for this. With Inhumans, you're like, what's happening?
Because it is about the royal family, I'm in the bag for all of these shows regardless. No. Even if I am told by everybody ahead of time that it's no good, I'm still in the bag for it. I'm going to sit through as much of it as I can handle. I hope they crush it. I mean, like, this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think has been very strong so far. So I'm hoping they can piggyback on some of that energy and that momentum. I'm really curious to see if they can do Black Bolt and Medusa and Lockjaw and Karnak and all these characters justice on a TV budget. I think they can, in a world where we're getting, like, Flash and Supergirl every week.
Yeah.
I feel like it's doable.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's nice about it as opposed to Agents of the S.H.I.E.L.D. is you're getting to see superhero characters on a regular weekly basis for a Marvel show, something we haven't got at all yet in the TV side.
And they described it like it's Game of Thrones with superpowers, which sounds great to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm the only one. That sounds great.
That seems like a good description. Let's see if it lives up to it.
Now, speaking kind of Game of Thrones.
It's all connected.
Yeah,
all
that's right.
Finn Jones was on Game of Thrones, yes. And Scott Buck is running both programs, and Finn Jones is Iron Fist, and that's what we're talking about.
Woo!
Hashtag it's all connected. Call me Kevin Feige.
So we're going to break down Iron Fist. Tell you a little bit about that. There's some. I really love the character. I know Lex and Lucretia, they're staring at me with daggers, like, you son of a.
No, not at all. I am so. I cannot profess maybe to be the level of fan of Iron Fist as you are, but I am endlessly fascinated by this guy for a number, both in story, in universe reasons, and on a meta level as well.
Well, I like old 70s kung fu stuff, like with David Carradine, things like that. And I love Keanu Reeves. So, I mean, I'm intrigued by Iron Fist. But to me, what I know about Iron Fist is he's pretty well Green Arrow, with the same similar backstory. So that was what sort of turned me off, is like, okay, I've heard this before.
Instead of learning how to be a bow and an archer, he just learns to turn his fist into a thing of iron. Yeah. That's right. So created by Roy Thomas and Gil Kane, originally premiered in Marvel Premiere. I had a long run in there. It was, I believe, 15... Yeah, Marvel 15 through 25, I believe.
And this was 1974, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. Which would be... That puts it the year after Enter the Dragon came out.
Yes.
A couple of years before some of the bigger, like, Shaw Brothers kung fu titles would start appearing. Like, you know, 36 Chamber of Shaolin or Five Venoms, I think, was a little bit after that. But that just gives you an idea of where it fits into the timeline of this kung fu pop culture emergence that was happening in America around that time.
Yeah, and because you also have Master Kung Fu, Shang-Chi, also created around that same time as well. And interesting how they embrace more of, widening the diversity of ethnicity with characters. So you have Shang-Chi coming over, more of an Eastern-inspired character, but then you have Iron Fist, he's just a white guy.
Also have a white guy.
Yes. Yep. You know, and that's just, you know, I guess you write what you know about being a white guy, I guess, for a lot of the creators back in the 70s.
Look, in 2017, it seemed, you look at it sideways a little bit, but it was 1974, and I don't think anybody's intentions were anything but pure.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like you say, I mean, that's what they relate to, is, oh man, I really like this kung fu stuff coming out, but I'm a white guy. I'm gonna have to write a white guy doing this and really getting into this. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there was anything to it other than that's just what they know.
Yeah, it was the time and the place. Yeah. And it was white creators predominantly working in comics at that time. So it makes sense, even though now, again, in 2017, you go, it tracks.
Yeah.
And now Marvel Premiere was kind of cool. It was almost like a travel balloon for a lot of different characters and stuff. So you put a character in an issue, see how the fan response was. You'd either let it go for a couple more issues, or you'd actually spin it off into its own series. So Iron Man. Nope, not Iron Man either, guys. Iron Fist. I'm going to get this character
there
right.
There you go.
Eventually, after 10 issues, decided to like, hey, let's spin him off into his own series. And towards the end of it, it was created by Roy Thomas and Gil Kane, but many other artists and writers touched it along the way. Tony Isabella, ended up Chris Claremont wrote the final few issues of Marvel Premiere before it went into Iron Fist, and then wrote the Iron Fist series. You had Arvel Jones, you had Larry Hama, you had Pat Broderick, who I probably know more from like Firestorm that he did for DC and stuff back then. And then you ended up the last couple issues of Marvel Premiere with a young artist by the name of John Byrne. Yes, the beginnings of that Byrne-Claremont collaboration started on Iron Fist. Wow. And it was interesting to go back because I started to read. It was a great opportunity to reread some of those issues as well. And just as much as I love John Byrne's art, especially back then at that time, man, this is definitely very early John Byrne work. And you can tell. It's whether like the inker maybe is not a good pairing with him.
Okay.
He had his inker called Al McWilliams, whether that's a real name or a pseudonym. I don't know.
Al McWilliams.
Yes.
Okay.
Man, it looks...
It's a little shaggy.
You see, yeah, you can see some, in some panels like that, like, oh, that's Byrne. And then other panels, you're like, ooh, what is this?
Oh, dear.
So a tracer is really important.
That's a tracer. There you go.
So did the stuff that you went back and revisited recently, did any of that cover the origin, like his fictional origin?
Yeah, so a lot of that was in the Marvel Premiere issues there. So, yeah, Roy Thomas and Gil Kane kind of laid that out in the first issue of Marvel Premiere. And then a lot of it was just then dealing with him coming back to the States and then some of the stuff that from Kun Lun kind of following him and then other adventures that he's getting to as he's reacclimating back to life in the States.
So going back to like the genesis point for Danny Rand becoming the Iron Fist, right? If I remember correctly, his father had some, like Wendell Rand had some dealings in Kun Lun, was never part of the Iron Fist heritage, but I think maybe worked for the ruler of Kun Lun for a while.
Well, at least, and that might be like things that have been added in with the Fraction Brubaker series.
Could be.
Yes. At least initially, it was.
Because that was the Fraction Brubaker Immortal Iron Fist was my big way into the character. That's a great run, and they did a great job expanding on not just Danny Rand's journey and not just the history of the various Iron Fists before him, but also of Kun Lun and this other reality, these mystical seven kingdoms, like doing a great job building out that mythology. So a lot of what I remember could be me like retroactively using that information to backfill.
Yeah,
because to me, I always understood that he sort of inherited this from his father, but not the Iron Fist part. But yeah, just sort of the interest and being involved in there. Yeah.
Based on, I believe, based on Immortal Iron Fist, the Iron Fist before Danny was Orson Randall?
Yes.
Yes, okay. But so his father had some dealings in Kun Lun, and then I remember later on, was it like a climbing accident? He is killed because
yes.
Harold Meacham, his business partner, like elects not to save him.
Correct.
And then Meacham goes back and takes over the company. And so it's a little bit like if Rutger Hauer in Batman Begins was also Joe Chill.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
So eventually he gets his 15 issues with Chris Claremont and John Byrne. John Byrne's art gets better as the series goes. You see him interact more with the Marvel Universe, having various misadventures. And then two cool things to note is one is the second to last issue is the introduction of Sabretooth to all of Marvel Comics continuity.
This was introduced in Iron Fist.
Yes. So.
Yeah, see, I did not know that until I was doing this research, and I was like, really? Sabretooth, who I know mostly as like Wolverine's direct rival through most of my comics and my cartoons.
Interesting that neither one of them debuted in an X-book, because Wolverine was a Hulk character in his first appearance.
And then look where they went on to. And then, in fact, issue 15 is a crossover with the X-Men. He visits them. And Claremont, he was almost like the Greg Berlanti back then as well, where he did a lot of cross-pollinating amongst his various series. So it's like Jean Grey was roommates with Misty Knight for a while. So that's how they were able to interact with the Iron Fist characters. So it was kind of cool to see this kind of big universe that he was really making a lot of characters from different series kind of interconnect. But so after 15 issues, though, the sales just weren't there.
This seems to be a recurring pattern with Iron Fist. A couple other characters. Iron Fist, Doctor Strange is another one where the mm-hmm. character is so strong and consistently utilized well in a supporting capacity, but no matter how strong their solo books are, they don't seem to run for very long at a stretch.
No, and the same thing for Power Man. His series was dwindling as well, and so they had the idea of why don't we pair him up with Power Man and see how these two characters get together. And so they got together in 49 and 50, and Chris Claremont and John Byrne did those issues. Then John Byrne left, and Chris Claremont stick around for a few more issues, but then it became Power Man and Iron Fist, and they went on to issue 125 before that ended. So, I mean, that was a nice little run between the two of them.
And it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense from a marketing standpoint. You put these two characters into a book, and suddenly it's like, wow, we're getting two heroes for the price of one comic. That's amazing. Look, this is economics, blah, blah, blah. But also, what? But also, it makes a lot of sense, as it turns out, because as I believe I mentioned when we talked about Luke Cage, however long ago it was, to me, putting those two characters together consistently brings out the, if not the best, my favorite elements of both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some characters just work better in a team or a duo, and you really, it is hard to see them in solo books. As cool as they are, you're like, you know, I like Power Man and Iron Fist together.
Now, and it was interesting because they had another Heroes for Hire spinoff that John Ostrander wrote for a little while. Each of them had little miniseries and stuff and little fits and starts. But then, like, when Brian Michael Bendis took over Avengers, the whole franchise, he really gravitated towards Luke Cage. And it wasn't until they rebooted the series again with New Avengers that they brought in, after Civil War and stuff, they started it over again and brought in kind of Iron Fist into the Avengers as well. But initially, I mean, Luke Cage was the more popular one, and then Iron Fist is always just kind of like laying more on the outskirts.
Well, I feel a little bit too like Luke Cage we've seen over the years far more progression and far more growth. I think Iron Fist, we've certainly seen, like we were just talking about the Immortal Iron Fist run that did greatly expand on the mythology, but I feel like the character of Danny Rand hasn't done anywhere near the same level of growing that Luke has. And I feel like, then it becomes even more necessary to put Danny and Luke together, because Luke can, in a way, having progressed so much, grab Danny and pull him along.
Yeah, it wasn't, let's just jump into that Immortal Iron Fist series, because that was a character that had been around for a while. Like, man, this character's so awesome. Why isn't somebody doing something really cool with him? And I feel like there's always that old adage, like, there's no terrible characters, it's just how you write them.
Yes.
You can make any character really cool.
The way I always describe it is, like, it's never what the thing is about, it's how it is about that thing.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's Mixer Mixaspetalik for Frank, he hates that guy. Yeah,
then it's absolutely what it's about, and he rejects the premise of all of it.
Oh, man, I finally saw that Supergirl episode, too. That was... Oof.
Would you say that... Mr. Mixaspetalik is your Hayden Christensen of fictional characters.
Yes.
All right, I guess I can't dispute that.
What about a DC extended universe big budget theatrical motion picture starring Hayden Christensen as Mr. Mixaspetalik?
I could see that happening.
That's the must miss event of the year for that. Any year that
sounds
it comes
like
out.
A movie made just for Frank Moran.
I would be the only one I would probably go see it just to be really disappointed by it.
Yep.
So then Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker, they collaborate, and that was kind of the thing that Marvel was doing for a while, where they'd have one popular writer kind of co-writing a book with somebody that was kind of coming up through the ranks.
Yes.
To kind of help hone their skills, and then eventually the idea is that either the bigger name creator would eventually leave, or maybe they'd both leave, and then the new creator would kind of take over and kind of write the book. And that's what happened after eventually Brubaker left, and then Fraction wrote at least the last story arc on his own. But I thought that did a great thing of expanding the scope of what the Iron Fist mythos was all about.
Yes, and you spend a lot of time with characters like Steel Serpent and Crane Mother, characters that I had not seen painted in such a complex light anywhere before. A lot of Iron Fist, as I was familiar with it before reading this run of stories, was very... Oh man, what's that? Very like 70s mm-hmm. grindhouse kung fu movie feel to it, and that's great, that's a lot of fun, but it's not terribly nuanced. And so it was exciting to see all of those characters given greater depth and greater shading.
Yeah. Done with the fantastic art by David Aja. Aja, how do you pronounce his name? But man, just fantastic
stuff.
Well,
it's also the Hawkeye team plus Brubaker.
Yes. And you basically seeing that there's, you know, there's various other cities. If you think of Kunlun as one, all of a sudden realizing that there's many other mystical cities as well that are kind of interconnected, and they come together for a tournament.
Tournament.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We'll fight.
I mean, if you're gonna do a martial arts film, of course you want to do something where all the greatest martial artists are pitted together to see who can be the top dog.
I mean, that is the whole point of martial arts, is to see people pitted against one another in mystical battles. I mean, that is every video game I owned in the '90s.
The other thing, too, is about, like, the, and I even sidestepped this as well, but the original Power Man and Iron Fist series ended with Iron Fist getting killed.
But it was not actually him. It was a doppelganger because comics.
Yes, yeah. Of course. Well, I mean, John Byrne, one of those, like, you know, he wants to restore things to the way they were, kind of coming up with a convoluted way in the Namor series to kind of reestablish that this
I was about to say, didn't he, after he quote-unquote died, and we find out, oh no, he's not actually dead, that was a double, poor random dude that's dead, I guess, he goes and hangs out with Namor, and doesn't he have cancer, and doesn't he, like, use his chi to cure his cancer?
Of course, man. Yeah.
So then I'm going, when was this in relation to Doctor Strange, The Oath? Because...
Way before.
So if it's way before, that whole story... And I get that that story is supposed to be like half a step out of full continuity. But that whole story is about him trying to find a cure for this cancer that Wong has.
Yeah.
Iron Fist is like hanging out at the beginning of that book. Why doesn't he go, hey, other dude who uses magic sometimes, why don't you teach me, Sorcerer Supreme of this realm, how to do the magic chi cancer cure? No, it's fine. See, it's a good story. Yeah. That wouldn't have happened if he did that, I suppose.
This was before the internet, and they really didn't. Well, they weren't Facebook friends, so they couldn't know that he was, like, curing cancer.
In the room together.
Yeah.
That's true. That wouldn't have been Danny Rand added a life event, cured cancer with my chi.
Status update. Jonathan Dimming says, hashtag heroes never die, hashtag except Tommy.
Except Tommy.
Sorry, yep, you're never coming back. Malcolm's going to make his hand come back. That's all he's going to do.
Yeah. Like, look at this coming week on Flash, look at how devastated Malcolm Merlin is over losing his son as he belts out a musical number in a fantasy.
In my fantasy.
Oh, there you go. In fact, I mentioned Malcolm Merlin. Yeah. So those of you who watch Legends Tomorrow and also watch this, so Jonathan Demme, take a drink.
Drink.
Yeah. Right now, early drink for you. Another team that he's also been involved with, too, is the Defenders. Matt Fraction kind of rebooted that concept as well with Red She-Hulk, Silver Surfer, Iron Fist, Doctor Strange. Oh, can't remember. But the idea was that they were, like, protecting the world against, like, things that you didn't know about.
So none of these characters will we be seeing on the Netflix crossover.
No, you won't be seeing any of that. But, I mean, at least it was cool that, you know, they gave Iron Fist a little bit more popularity. I think he was really popular, certainly, after his series ended, looking for other places to put him. So that was kind of a cool little run to do. It only lasted 12 issues. It was really a cool idea, but just never really caught fire with the public.
Didn't he? I have this memory, and maybe I hallucinated it one day.
Okay.
Did he or did he not pose for a sustained period of time as Daredevil?
I don't know if it's a sustained period of time, but he would do that make people think that, Matt Burdock and...
Can't be Daredevil. Look, they're standing next to each other.
There you go.
He can't possibly have friends that can wear the costume. I vaguely remember, because wasn't he Daredevil during Civil War?
Yes, that's right. He was.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't
make that up.
No, you didn't make that up.
That isn't something I dreamed.
No.
All right, I feel a little more secure now.
Mm-hmm. So looking at you, Lex, you read Immortal Iron Fist.
Yes.
Do you, and pretty much, even though Iron Fist is interacting with a lot of different characters, you can kind of think like him as like a solo vehicle for him. Do you like him in that route, or do you still rather have him with Luke Cage?
I really can only point to Immortal Iron Fist as a great example for me of Danny Rand working as a solo lead protagonist and them hitting all of the marks. You know what I mean? Outside of that, and they do it so incredibly well in that book that I think it almost balances the scales ultimately because of how well they do it there. Outside of those stories, I still find I gravitate towards him the most when he has somebody else to play off of. I feel like he's got a lot of personality, but you need somebody to bring it out of him.
Yeah, and that's why it's just... I hope that they don't missed the opportunity to have him more involved with some Doctor Strange characters as well, because that seems to be something that I could see them doing with Iron Fist, whether it be in the movies or on Netflix or whatever, because that's almost as good as where he is with Luke Cage and the Power Man and Iron Fist. It's like, I like the magical stuff. Let's kind of focus on that a little bit. Yeah,
it was a interesting balance between, especially for the Power Man and Iron Fist series, like doing street-level stuff in New York and then also getting involved with the mystical, you know, mumbo-jumbo back in Kun Lun, getting involved in adventures and seeing what... Like, but basically, you get to see like Luke Cage be kind of fish out of water when he's got to deal with stuff from Kun Lun. Like, well, what is this all about, Danny? What's going on? So, I don't know. For this, it'd be interesting to see now that they're taking basically David Walker's Power Man and Iron Fist series, taking those two characters, and again, instead of keeping them united, they're splitting them back up again, I guess due to the popularity
of the Netflix
series.
Probably.
Yeah. And the idea is that, all right, we'll give Luke Cage, we'll give Danny Rand his own series, and then we'll have Brian Michael Bendis come in and then do a Defender series, which is kind of encapsulating all the four characters that we've seen.
So we're going to have the same lineup that we're going to see on Netflix in a book.
Yes. I have to admit, again, I worry. I think splitting them up is the wrong move. I think putting them back into individual series, I don't think either of those two are going to last very long, and it's going to be Defenders with Brian Michael Bendis as a big name behind it. It's probably the one that's going to go the longer run.
We will have to see how the Iron Fist Netflix series ultimately fares. We'll have to see where the conversation is at after the first weekend. But I think Luke Cage probably right now is having this moment that the character has probably never had because of how big that Netflix series was. I think now is a perfect time to try and launch a solo book again. Will that book ultimately be successful? That depends on a lot of things. Some of it is quality of the book. And like we were just talking about, it's not that you can't tell a great Luke Cage story. It's just that a lot of people didn't. You can, and every time I'm going to roll the dice and pick up one of these books because I believe those stories are there to be told. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm optimistic.
And, two, a lot of it's about access. And now it's not just comic book shops, which, I mean, not everybody grew up in a place where they had those. But with the internet and Comixology and all these other things, the fact that people have access, people that will be interested in looking for Luke Cage and people that, say, watch stuff like this where we're kind of comparing the shows and stuff like that, this is giving people a broader audience so maybe they can laugh.
Yeah, I think if you had to kind of rank them and who's going to go further, I think it's going to be Defenders first, then Luke Cage, and I think Iron Fist. I think that's going to be the first one of those three that would get canceled. I worry with the creative team, they're fine, but I just feel like, man, nothing's been able to last as long as even like the Brubaker Faction series did.
Well, I think part of that might be there are a lot of, as we saw in Immortal Iron Fist, because a lot of that run was not focused solely on Danny Rand. The present day main story that carries you through is he's very much the sole protagonist, but there was a lot of ancillary stuff there where you tracked other characters' journeys. I think there's a lot of room to play with the Iron Fist mythology, and you don't have to necessarily center your story on Danny Rand. The Iron Fist is a mantle that gets passed. We've seen how many characters in the Marvel Universe have, in the past few years, passed their mantle down to somebody else. I feel like maybe you have that mantle get passed down, and suddenly you open up a potentially infinite range of new possibilities.
And that is the thing, is especially, you know, using Kamala Khan as an example, like maybe making Iron Fist a different ethnicity or something would be more interesting and bring someone back and sort of service an audience that wasn't there before. Like, especially being that it is a kung fu book, ideally Iron Fist should be Asian. And I think that we're finally at a time where I can see that happening and see it do well because of the success of Kamala Khan.
But I also wonder, what does it say about if the concept of a character is great, but your lead character in that concept isn't that compelling? If we're thinking that, I mean, I still enjoy Danny Rand, but as Lex, as you were mentioning there with Immortal Iron Fist, the focus is so much on other stuff in addition to Danny Rand. That was a lot, very much interesting that, you know, what's it to say that you could take Danny Rand out of that series and still have a really good run, but you don't need that character? Does that now, depending on who's writing it?
I would say ultimately, yes, it depends less on who's writing it, more how they're writing it. But I don't know. And again, that's not to say that you can't tell a great story starring Danny Rand. They did it. We've been talking about it for a few minutes now.
Yeah.
You don't have to. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to anchor this, all of these concepts to one character that you may or may not be able to work with consistently the way you want to.
I mean, we live in a world where there's been a different Batman, a different Spider-Man, a different Superman. Those are probably your top superheroes. So why can't there be a different Iron Fist?
Don't you do it. I don't want a new Iron Fist. I like my Danny Rand.
Either that, or you really got to make Danny Rand grow and change the way that they've been able to do with, say, Luke Cage.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost like he just kind of centers around that same kind of orbit, almost like Johnny Storm with the Fantastic Four.
A little bit.
Yeah. Where he just they just kind of hit the same similar beats, and he kind of just goes in a circle instead of really going in a straight line.
Which is fine if you've got a Reed and a Sue and a Ben, so he can bounce that stuff back and forth off of them. But Johnny Storm outside the Fantastic Four has never really worked for me.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
Especially that Flame On rap.
Although I will say the Spider-Man Human Torch miniseries that Dan Slott did with Ty Templeton, oh great, that is a great, if you want to see
exception to every rule.
Yes.
And Frank got that for me for my birthday.
That's right. Yes, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah,
yes.
It was fun.
Oh, all right. It's when that just got a lot of heart into it. Have you read that?
I have not.
It's got a lot of heart, Steve. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been our little chat about Iron Fist. Again, the Netflix series will drop on March 17th, so make sure you check that out if you have Netflix. If not, it's never too late to subscribe.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, but as always, like us on Facebook. Keep Lex Michael alive and near and dear to us by giving him those 5-star reviews on iTunes. Specifically, just give Lex a 5-star review. Don't even have to mention the rest of us.
We don't need it.
Just praise Lex on that 5-star review.
Appreciate it, you guys.
There you go. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, and thanks everybody for hopping in the chat. Jonathan Demon, you are a saint among saints.
Yes. Salacious Crumb!
There he is. Thank you, Steve, from the booth for everything this episode and for the lovely Salacious Crumb that we've seen out here to wind us down for the episode. We'll be back next week for another hot new episode on the Comic Book Exchange, right here on Book Circle Online. Speed off.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.